New York. This is Democracy Now!
It feels like today, and I think it's a fact, that black lives do not matter to our elected officials in Louisville, in Kentucky, and apparently in this country.
Protests erupt across the United States after no Louisville police officers were charged with the death of Breonna Taylor, who they shot dead in her own home. A grand jury indicted one officer for shooting into an adjacent apartment during the fatal no-knock raid.
According to Kentucky law, the use of force by Mattingly and Cosgrove was justified to protect themselves. This justification bars us from pursuing criminal charges in Miss Breonna Taylor's death.
We'll go to Louisville for the latest. Then the investigation of the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin is in its final stages. We'll speak to Jacob Blake Sr. His son was paralyzed last month after police shot him in the back 7 times in front of 3 of his children.
They shot my son 7 times. 7 times. Like he didn't matter. But my son matters.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Louisville, Kentucky, a grand jury has declined to charge any of the 3 white police officers who killed Breonna Taylor with her death, more than 6 months after they shot the 26-year-old black emergency room technician in her own home March 13th. The grand jury's only indictments were 3 counts of wanton endangerment against former Louisville police detective Brett Hankison for shooting into the apartment of a neighbor during the deadly no-knock raid that ended Taylor's life. News of the grand jury's single indictment sparked immediate outrage in Louisville, where protesters began flooding the streets moment after news of the decision broke.
Feels like today, and I think it's a fact, that black lives do not matter to our elected officials in Louisville, in Kentucky, and apparently in this country. This has been an incredibly traumatic, difficult time for the community.
Overnight, protesters in Louisville took to the streets, defying a 9 p.m. curfew. Louisville's police chief said a suspect was in custody after 2 officers were shot and hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. Police fired chemical agents and projectiles throughout the night, arresting at least 46 people. Elsewhere, protests erupted in cities from coast to coast after headlines will go to Louisville for the latest on Breonna Taylor's killing. President Donald Trump Wednesday refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power after the election if he loses the vote to Joe Biden. Trump was asked about this during a White House press briefing.
Will you commit here today for a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it, and you know who knows it better than anybody else. The Democrats know it better than anybody else.
Earlier this week, Trump said he expects a November election to end up before the Supreme Court, saying that's why he's pushing the Senate to rapidly confirm a replacement for Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died last week. Meanwhile, The Atlantic magazine has revealed Republican Party officials are looking at ways to subvert the election process to ensure Trump stays in power. One option would be to have Republican-led state legislatures claim the results of the election to be fraudulent and then choose a slate of Republican electors to vote in the Electoral College regardless of the outcome of the actual vote. The United States reported nearly 1,100 deaths from COVID-19 and over 40,000 new coronavirus infections Wednesday. At the White House, President Trump said he might overrule the Food and Drug Administration if it issues stricter guidelines on the emergency use of a vaccine. Public health officials warned Trump's push to approve a vaccine before Election Day threatens to bring an unsafe and untested product to market. This comes as CNN reports White House Task Force Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx is distressed with the direction of Trump's coronavirus policy and is not certain how much longer she can serve in her position. CNN reports Birx believes White House coronavirus advisor Dr. Scott Atlas is feeding the president misleading information about the efficacy of face masks for controlling the spread of the virus. On Capitol Hill, top infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci warned a Senate committee that many of those who survive COVID-19 suffer symptoms measured in weeks to months.
They have fatigue, myalgia, fever, and involvement of the neurological system, as well as cognitive abnormalities such as the inability to concentrate.
Dr. Fauci warned many patients who appeared to have recovered from COVID-19 were found to have inflammation of the heart.
These are the kind of things that tell us we must be humble and that we do not completely understand the nature of this illness.
Missouri Republican Governor Mike Parson and his wife said Wednesday they've tested positive for coronavirus. Throughout the pandemic, Governor Parson has opposed mask mandates and has frequently appeared at public gatherings without a mask, most recently as last weekend. In July, Parson dismissed concerns that opening Missouri schools would lead to a surge of COVID-19 among students, family members, and school employees.
Got to get back to school. They're at the lowest risk possible. And if they do get COVID-19, which they will, and they will when they go to school, they're not going to the hospitals. They're not going to have to sit in doctor's office days. They're going to go home, and they're going to get over it.
The global death toll from COVID-19 has topped 975,000, according to government statistics, though the true count is likely far higher. Indonesia reported more than 4,400 new coronavirus cases on Wednesday, a daily record. India recorded more than 1,000 deaths and over 80,000 new cases, keeping India on track to pass the United States within weeks as the nation with the highest caseload. In Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau warned Wednesday of a new surge in coronavirus cases.
In our four biggest provinces, the second wave isn't just starting. It's already underway. We're on the brink of a fall that could be much worse than the spring.
France's health minister has ordered new restrictions on public gatherings amidst a record surge in new cases, while Spain's now seeing more daily cases than it did at the height of its first wave of the pandemic last spring. In climate news, a new study in the journal Nature finds melting of the Antarctic ice sheet will cause global sea levels to rise by more than 8 feet, even if nations meet their emissions reduction goals under the Paris Climate Accord. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom Wednesday signed a bill to phase out all gas-powered cars by 2035. Meanwhile, a new Oxfam report finds the wealthiest 1% of the world's population is responsible for emitting twice as much greenhouse gas as the poorest half of humanity. Brazil's National Center for the Prevention of Forest Fires reports over 7 million acres of the world's largest wetland have burned in unprecedented fires exacerbated by the climate crisis. The Pantanal fires have consumed 50% more land this year than have burned along the west coast of the United States. In California, the Creek Fire has become the largest single-source fire in state history, burning nearly 300,000 acres in Fresno and Madera counties. Five of California's six largest fires in recorded history are still raging, including the record-shattering August Complex Fire, which is now at 860,000 acres with 40% containment. Chinese authorities have continued to construct mass internment camps for Muslim minority groups, even as China's government claimed they were winding down their so-called re-education system. That's according to a new report by an Australian think tank, citing satellite images showing the construction of dozens of new camps in Xinjiang province over the past 2 years. Over 1 million ethnic Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities are believed to be imprisoned in the camps, with countless children separated from their families. Meanwhile, Reuters reports China's pushing Tibetan rural laborers off their land and into military-style training centers, where they're turned into factory workers in a program similar to Xinjiang's internment camps. Amnesty International is demanding the United States Senate reject Chad Wolf to serve as Secretary of Homeland Security, citing his involvement in President Trump's family separations policy along the U.S.-Mexico border and other human rights violations. On Wednesday, Wolf told a Senate committee at his confirmation hearing he was unaware that his wife was awarded more than $6 million in contracts from the Department of Homeland Security since 2018. Wolf has served as acting secretary of the department since last November, though earlier this month, a federal judge ruled he's likely serving unlawfully in that capacity. The Trump administration's restored a wealth test rule for green card applicants after suspending the hardline immigration policy during the pandemic. The so-called public charge rule allows immigration officials to deny permanent residency to documented low-income immigrants who seek benefits, including Medicaid, food stamps, and housing vouchers. President Trump's expanded a ban on racial sensitivity training to include federal contractors, not just federal employees. This comes as the Washington Post reports Trump privately complained to senior aides that African Americans have themselves to blame in their struggle for racial equality, that he, quote, could never understand, unquote, why First Lady Melania Trump wanted to go to Africa, and that Jews are, quote, only in it for themselves, unquote. Last Friday, Trump praised a nearly all-white crowd at a campaign rally in Bemidji, Minnesota, in language echoing eugenicists.
You have good genes, you know that, right? You have good genes. A lot of it's about the genes, isn't it? Don't you believe? The racehorse theory, you think we're so different? You have good genes in Minnesota.
Karen Mrotz, executive director of Jewish Community Action, responded, "For Minnesota Jews, it's chilling to hear this language, which echoes the race science used by the Nazis to justify the extermination of so many of our ancestors," unquote. The Guardian newspapers revealed pro-Trump right-wing activists in Oregon plotted to violently attack protesters in Portland and even discussed carrying out political assassinations. The Guardian reports, based on leaked chat logs of members of a group called Patriots Coalition, a member of the group also discussed using violent force in support of President Trump. In August, one member wrote, quote, "I'm waiting for the presidential go to start open firing." Facebook, YouTube, and Zoom are facing accusations of censorship after the platforms blocked the streaming of an online seminar at San Francisco State University featuring Palestinian activist Leila Khaled. Zoom and Facebook blocked organizers from using their platforms in advance after coming under pressure from groups including the Anti-Defamation League and the Lawfare Project. The start of the seminar was live-streamed on YouTube, but then was abruptly stopped after 22 minutes. In other tech news, environmental and indigenous activists recently had their Facebook accounts temporarily suspended as they planned an online protest against private equity firm KKR, an investor in the Coastal GasLink pipeline in British Columbia. And Florida's Republican Attorney General has asked the FBI to investigate billionaire Democratic donor Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, after he donated $16 million to a fund helping people with past felony convictions to pay off fees and fines so they can regain their voting rights. The fund is run by the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, headed by Desmond Meade, a former prisoner who's become a leading voting rights activist. Earlier this week, Time magazine named Meade one of the 100 most influential people in the United States. But on Wednesday, he was dealt a setback after the state clemency board rejected a pardon for him. Meade, who graduated from law school, needs a pardon in order to become a member of the Florida Bar. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the quarantine report. When we come back, we go to Louisville, Kentucky, where protests have erupted after a grand jury failed to charge any of the three white police officers for the death of Breonna Taylor. Stay with us.
First they stole our body.
I can't cry no more.
Then they stole our sons.
I can't cry no more.
Then they stole our God.
I can't cry no more.
And gave us new ones.
I can't cry no more.
Then they stole our beauty.
I can't cry no more.
The comfort in our skin.
I can't cry no more.
And then they gave us duty.
I can't cry no more.
And then they gave us sin.
I can't cry no more.
And then came generations. Of the nation was laid with these brown hands.
I can't cry no more.
The solace of a people. Acts of malice and hatred without cease.
Cry No More by Rhiannon Giddens. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the quarantine report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by my co-host, Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Good morning, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world.
Well, a grand jury has failed to charge any of the three white Louisville police officers involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor with her death, more than 6 months after they stormed the 26-year-old black woman's home in a no-knock raid and fired a hail of bullets in the middle of the night, leaving her dead. The grand jury's only indictments were three counts of wanton endangerment against former Louisville police detective Brett Hankison for shooting into the apartment of a neighbor during the raid that ended Taylor's life on March 13th. The two officers who shot her six times were not charged after the grand jury deemed their actions justified. In all, the three officers fired 32 shots in the raid. This is Kentucky's Republican Attorney General Daniel Cameron announcing the decision at a news conference on Wednesday.
After hearing the evidence from our team of prosecutors, the grand jury voted to return an indictment against Detective Hankison for three counts of wanton endangerment for wantonly placing the three individuals in apartment three in danger of serious physical injury or death. The charge of wanton endangerment in the first degree is a Class D felony, and if found guilty, the accused can serve up to 5 years for each count.
Breonna Taylor's family responded to the grand jury's decision through their attorney, Benjamin Crump, who called it, quote, outrageous and offensive to Breonna Taylor's memory. It's yet another example of no accountability for the genocide of persons of color by white police officers. With all we know about Breonna Taylor's killing, how could a fair and just system result in today's decision? Crump asked. Soon after the decision came down, protesters flooded the streets in cities nationwide. In Louisville, at least two police officers were shot before a 9 p.m. curfew. Police say the shooting suspect is in custody. Police fired chemical agents and projectiles at protesters throughout the night, arresting at least 46 people. This is one of the protesters in Louisville.
It feels like today, and I think it's a fact, that black lives do not matter to our elected officials in Louisville, in Kentucky, and apparently in this country. This has been an incredibly traumatic, difficult time for the community.
News of the grand jury's decision comes after months of relentless protests demanding justice for Breonna Taylor amidst an uprising for racial justice. But Wednesday, Trump praised how her case was handled.
Well, I thought it was really brilliant. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron is doing a fantastic job. I think he's a star. He's handling it very well. You know who he is, right?
All of this comes as an FBI investigation into the no-knock warrant the officers used to enter Breonna Taylor's home in March is ongoing. For more, we go directly to Louisville, Kentucky, where we're joined by Sadiqa Reynolds, president and CEO of Louisville's Urban League. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Sadiqa. You're an attorney. You're an activist. You've been in the streets. Can you respond to the grand jury decision?
I think the lack of indictments in the grand jury process is an indictment on the system itself. Some of what we heard the attorney general talk about presenting to the grand jury, some of the things he talked about being inconclusive. One example is we've all heard and read the death certificate that said she had been shot five times. He indicated yesterday in his talk that that was six times. These are things that should have gone to a jury. They have created a completely separate grand jury system for police officers. And really, if you compare it to the process that Kenny Walker went through, you all will remember that Kenny Walker was the boyfriend of Breonna, and he was in the home at the time that police arrived. And he ended up firing at the officers and hitting one of them. And his grand jury process, I mean, he was there, same fact pattern, everything that they would have had to present as it relates to police, they should have had to present as it related to Kenny. Kenny's grand jury process took less than 3 minutes. And for these officers, 2 days of presenting. And there's something else. We are saying now that the grand jury has said that the officer's behavior was justifiable, but we don't know if that's what the grand jury said or if that's what the attorney general decided and therefore did not even present to the grand jury. We don't know what he presented to the grand jury. And I think that's really important for us to talk about. I think the other part of it is anybody practicing law knows it. There's nothing easier than getting an indictment. There's nothing easier than getting an indictment. And so the fact that they could not and did not get indictments, in my view, is an indictment on this entire system. And it is the reason that people are protesting and raising their voices, because of this inequity in our justice system.
Well, Sadiqa, the attorney general said that the state's investigation about the use of force by these police officers, that the use of force was justified because they'd been fired upon first by Breonna Taylor's husband, Kenneth Walker. Your response, not husband, her partner. Mm-hmm. Your response to that, what the attorney general said?
The police, the officers had the right to fire on the person who fired on them. That self-defense does not apply to Breonna. Breonna had no weapon. Breonna did not fire. We are changing the law in order to take care of police officers. That is just not how that should be applied. Again, there are so many things that are questions of fact here for a jury to decide. When the attorney general was addressing whether or not Hankinson fired any weapon that landed in Breonna's body, he answered there was no conclusive evidence. Well, was there any evidence at all? Because if, in fact, there was, that's something that would be a question for a jury and not answered in a grand jury. When you heard him say, there was one witness who indicated that they did hear the police announce themselves, because you'll remember this is a no-knock warrant, and then it was changed to a knock and announce. And so the police officers are saying, we did knock and announce. Well, 12 people were interviewed, and 12 people, 11 of them said, we did not hear police announce. What you heard the attorney general say is there was one person who did hear them say, this is police. That person was upstairs and outside. Well, did you tell the grand jury that there were 11 other people who did not hear police announce? Did you tell the grand jury two people called 911 and said, we need the police here? Did you allow the grand jury to listen to Kenneth's tape of him calling 911 where he's saying someone has come in and they shot Breonna?
Wait, actually, Sadiqa, we want to play that 911 clip. This is when Brianna's boyfriend called the police for help. This is Kenneth Walker.
I don't know what's happening. Somebody kicked in the door and shot my girlfriend.
You said 26. Where was she shot at?
I don't know. She's on the grill right now. I don't know. Help! Oh my God! Yes, help!
What's your name, sir? Is she alert and able to talk to you?
No.
So that's Kenny Walker crying. He calls the police because he doesn't realize it's the police who shot his girlfriend dead with these six bullets. Now, this is a critically important point. They were not in uniform, and he clearly did not know who these men were.
That is exactly right. And so then you have an attorney general who stands up yesterday and tells us that he should have known, basically, that somehow he did know because there's someone else. I know there are 12 people who didn't hear police, and there are two people that called 911, and there's Kenny who called 911 to get police on the scene. But somehow you should believe that everybody knew it was police. And so, I mean, this is not a question for a jury. It is unbelievable. It is an unbelievable assault on our intelligence. It is offensive, and it exposes the system for what it is. This system is designed to protect the privileged, and police have the greatest privilege. And that is why we are in the streets. People are so frustrated with not being heard, not being seen, not being protected or valued. There's so many problems with this case. And anyone knows, I mean, on average, really, a grand jury could indict 12 people in an hour. I mean, they just keep spitting them out. It's not a hard process. Prosecutors go in, they give you a little bit of information, and you move on. You vote and you move on. And if you get a tape of a grand jury, you would see that. In any criminal case, excuse me, you would get a copy of the grand jury indictment. And usually they're not 5 minutes long. So this process of presenting all of this information and contradictory information, that doesn't happen for regular citizens. That is just not the way the grand jury process works. And those of us who know the system understand that. You know, and there's another thing that is important here. The attorney general was not prepared yesterday to tell us whether or not the warrant was even a good warrant. I mean, do you understand that? This woman was killed in March, and we are now in September, and we still don't know if the warrant that they were relying on was even a good warrant. He did not answer that question. If a white woman, if a 26-year-old white woman was killed in this country, and 6 months later, you cannot answer the question about whether or not police went in with a good warrant, this country would burn itself down. But somehow we are supposed to act with all of this restraint and be ready to move on and heal. It is frustrating. The system is completely broken and needs to be reformed because there's too much subjectivity.
I want to ask you about the foot. This new information yesterday, Sadiqa Reynolds, that the attorney general shared, saying that Brianna was shot not five times, but six. When he was questioned about this, to the shock of everyone, he said, well, there was something in her foot. Talk about the significance of what it means to be in her foot.
Listen, it has been my understanding that Brianna died in the fetal position on the floor. And if you think of police officers, we know that Kenny shot one shot and he stopped firing, and they continued to fire. They continued to fire repeatedly into that apartment. And apparently, according to the attorney general, a bullet was lodged in her foot. First of all, even the fact that he is contradicting the death certificate is a question of fact. What was it, a bullet? What was lodged there? Who fired it? We need to understand more. This case deserved a jury. I prayed when I heard that. All I could think of was, I pray to God that he has told her mother before he told the world that her baby was shot in the foot. I hope he had a very long conversation with the mother. I have since learned that there was not enough conversation. He did not explain everything. This is a
And just to be clear, it means she was lying down already.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. She was lying down already. And you heard him talk about there was one bullet that would have killed her. But I don't know if it was. Was it the first bullet? So did she suffer through the first three or four or five? And then it was the sixth one that killed her. Which one? Which bullet killed her? How long was she alive? How long did she suffer? She seemed to be alive when Kenny was on that telephone. And again, they're saying to us, well, she, you know, that one fatal bullet would have killed her within seconds or a couple of minutes. Well, but there's so many questions here that go unanswered because of this attorney general's process. How this has been handled is an incredible miscarriage of justice for this city. We deserve better. Breonna Taylor deserved better. Her mother deserved better than this.
Well, Sadiqa, you've said that nobody would have even known the names of Breonna Taylor or Kenneth Walker if it weren't for the protesters. Could you talk about the significance of the protests that have broken out, not just in Louisville, but all across the country? And also what happened last night, over 100 protesters were reportedly arrested in Louisville?
Mm-hmm. So let's start with the fact that in March, when Breonna was first killed by police, we were at the top of the pandemic and people were just trying to figure out what this virus was, how their offices were going to work. And we heard that Breonna Taylor had been killed. The officers did not have on body cameras. And basically it was described to us as a drug raid. And when they went in, the suspect fired, hitting an officer. And then, the female suspect was basically killed in the crossfire. And so that is not exactly what happened, right? And so people begin to ask questions. But again, they're doing it in a pandemic with so many other things happening. And this case is sort of pushed to the back of our minds, some of us. But of course, you have her mother still fighting for answers because she knows who her child is. And you have us calling to say, explain again why there are no body cameras. It doesn't make sense. These officers could not have been undercover. You know, they obviously were going to serve a warrant. Any cover would have been blown. Why were there no body cameras? And so you had this repeated questioning, but no traction, no changes. The police department just saying they did everything right. And then Kenny Walker, of course, is in custody. So in March, he's arrested. He's locked up in jail. And March, April, May, you begin more and more people are calling her name and saying her name. And we begin to get the national attention. And when that happens, that's when we see Kenny released from custody, charges dismissed. And I have to commend one of the judges here. I have to tell you, Judge Stevens released Kenny on home incarceration. That was a sign and a half that this was a terrible case. When a black man shoots a white police officer and a black judge says, I'm not going to make him stay in jail because there's something wrong here, that is a sign that this is a problematic case. And so you fast forward. Kenny is ultimately released completely, even from home incarceration. His charges are dismissed. And then people are more and more saying her name across the country, across the globe. And you get movement, you get motion. And these protesters, and I have certainly been one of them, for 118 days, people have protested in this city, raising their voices for justice, for change, to begin with police reform, but even really going beyond that and saying there are injustices in every system in this city, and we want to see things changed. And those powerful protests have been successful. And it was important for us to say to everyone who had been willing to sacrifice their freedom, their bodies, their time to raise their voices here in Louisville, because it has been dangerous for us. I mean, the first night of protests, we were met with tear gas and pepper bullets. Police started that aggression, and then it did get, you know, things got out of hand very quickly. David McAtee, I think you all remember, excuse me, David McAtee was killed because police were at 26th and Broadway. And if you could just understand Louisville, most of the protests have been happening in downtown Louisville, some to the east of downtown. The west end of this city is much like other urban areas, uninvested, nothing there. So these folks are not at Fifth Street, not in the Highlands, but instead they're all the way down, 21 blocks away from any protest at 26th and Broadway. And they are just living, they're doing what they do all of the time. Police take the National Guard down there. They begin shooting pepper bullets at people. David McAtee, who is a beloved community member and even beloved by police, he catered their trainings. He shoots a gun into the air. We aren't sure that he even realizes it's police that are outside. He seems to be trying to disperse the crowd. Police return fire. He is killed. But it started with them shooting people who were out. They're literally shooting at people's heads for protest violation. I'm so sorry, for curfew violations. For curfew violations. So you move forward from there. And I think it's important for us to say what was accomplished in these protests. It was more than just whether or not Daniel Cameron decided to indict these officers. We can't just say that's the only way we can measure the success of the protesters. But instead, we have to talk about the fact that the police chief was exited, that there was one officer that was indicted, that now we have mandatory body cameras here in Louisville, Kentucky, when there's a search warrant issued, that we've banned no-knocks in this city. So no more no-knock warrants. The creation of a civilian review board in order to create an office of inspector general to oversee the police department. This is a review board that I am currently on and helping to create. Those kinds of things have happened, a top to bottom review of our police department. Now, in writing, we have this duty to intervene. Our police officers have a responsibility to intervene if they see an officer engaged in misconduct. You and I probably would have thought that that was something that was just understood. Well, now it's in writing because we couldn't count on that. We're getting an independent investigation of our police department. There are so many things. And I go back to, again, if this case had not made the national news, please believe me, Kenneth Walker would have been prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. It is because of the protest in the street that this case changed. We changed everything.
And I want to again reiterate, he was arrested and jailed as he is mourning the death of his girlfriend who is gunned down in front of him. But I want to go back to the Kentucky Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, who, of course, announced the grand jury decision and talked about who he doesn't want weighing in.
There will be celebrities, influencers, and activists who, having never lived in Kentucky, will try to tell us how to feel, suggesting they understand the facts of this case and that they know our community and the Commonwealth better than we do. But they don't. Let's not give in to their attempts to influence our thinking or capture our emotions.
And then this is the Republican Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, just weeks ago, who spoke at the Republican National Convention and referenced the killing of Breonna Taylor.
It was General Dwight Eisenhower, a future Republican president, who said, "Democracy is a system that recognizes the equality of humans before the law." Whether you are the family of Breonna Taylor or David Dorn, these are the ideals that will heal our nation's wounds. Republicans will never turn a blind eye to unjust acts, but neither will we accept an all-out assault on Western civilization.
And yesterday at the news conference, President Trump praised Cameron as a rising star in the Republican Party. Your response, Sadiqa Reynolds?
Well, he certainly is a rising star in the Republican Party, and I can see very clearly how he is going to be used against us in every imaginable way. I think we are in a very, very dangerous territory in this country. And there are people right now who are so focused on greed and their money and what they can achieve for themselves, and they are missing the bigger picture. This democracy is under attack. It is not just under attack for Black Americans. It is under attack for all of us. Life as we know it is changing every day, little by little. Our democracy is being killed. It's the death of a thousand cuts. And we all had better start paying attention. Daniel Cameron's rhetoric sounds good. He is an articulate Black man. And I hate when people say that, you're so articulate. But let me tell you, listening to him deliver the results of his investigation yesterday and the grand jury, the danger that is posed to us is real. And we had better be ready to respond, because this country will change and is changing. And it is not for the better. And that is not a political statement. That is not about partisanship. From me, I don't care if you are a Democrat or a Republican. I run a nonpartisan organization. But what I care about is justice. What I care about is somebody who is honest. And when you look a man in the eye and you expect for them to do their job and they come back and that is not what happened, you need to hold them accountable. We are in danger in this state and in this country. It is not a joke. It is really almost unreal. And people of every race, nationality, gender, religion had better be paying attention and get out of your head about what is best for you and think about this country. We have got to do something different here.
Very quickly, Sadiqa, on the issue of the fire detective Hankison, who fired wildly into the bedroom window, into the glass door, ultimately not charged for anything involving the death of Breonna Taylor, but for the bullets going into the neighbor's apartment. He is a person who we've learned more about because as his picture got out there, one woman after another came forward and said, that man sexually assaulted me, picked me up, saying he was a cop, he would drive me home after I left a bar, and others said that too. Can you talk about the fact that he might not even face any jail time, or up to 15, he faces three charges of wanton endangerment?
You can count on him not facing any charges at any time at all. In fact, it's my understanding that he was arrested in Shelby County. He turned himself in. He posted his $15,000 bond and he was out. So this is, again, another slap in the face. We can plan on him absolutely not spending any time in jail for the death of Breonna Taylor, for wanton endangerment, for anything related to the shooting, the killing that happened at that apartment complex at night. He may end up spending time in jail for the assault on these women who I think have tried to defer. I think they have really made an attempt to honor this Black woman's life by sort of silencing themselves. And I expect that they will step forward even more now as time goes on. Also, it is my understanding that those things are being investigated. But all it's going to show us is you can murder a Black woman in America and serve no time, but the sexual assault of a white woman will come down on you for that.
And the bullets into the neighbor's apartment, that was a white family?
I don't know who the families were. I don't know what color, what race the people were. I have no idea. The issue is not in that case what their race was. I'm simply saying, let me calm down and say this clearly. If we were talking about a 26-year-old white woman in September, the results of this case would have been different. That's what Black people know for sure, and that's why they're in the street. And that is also why our allies are in the street with us. And I think it is important for us to say here in Louisville, Kentucky, demonstrations, the rallies, the protests, they have been integrated. So while we certainly have challenges around race, we also have alignment too for justice. And it has been a really interesting thing to watch. And I pray that we continue to move together as best we can. I said yesterday, and I sincerely mean it, I think we are in a fight for the soul of our country. We are at 49-51, and the good guys are losing, but it is a close fight. We've got to keep fighting.
Sadiqa Reynolds, thanks so much for joining us, president and CEO of the Louisville Urban League, an attorney in Kentucky. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. When we come back, we go to Milwaukee, where the investigation of the police shooting of Jacob Blake is underway. We'll speak to Jake Blake's father, Jacob Blake Sr. Stay with us.
Betrayers beware, say a prayer if you fear for the believers. For the faith that decides and sees you have to be redeemed. When I gave it to Savage Brown by the way of the disciples. So and just be sure that you show me and all the
The Charade by D'Angelo and the Vanguard. This is Democracy Now!, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. As outrage mounts over the grand jury ruling and the police killing of Breonna Taylor, we turn to Wisconsin, where the investigation into the police shooting of Jacob Blake is in its final stages. Jake Blake's case became a flashpoint for national protest after the African-American father was shot in the back by Kenosha police seven times in August, paralyzing him. White police officer Rustin Chesky fired the shots at point-blank range into Jacob Blake's back as Blake leaned into his car. Inside the car were his three boys, aged 3, 5, and 8. Prosecutors in Wisconsin have tapped former Madison Police Chief Noble Ray to serve as an independent voice during the final stages of the investigation into the shooting. Ray will review the State Department of Justice's findings before a report is sent to Kenosha County District Attorney Michael Gravely, who will ultimately decide whether charges should be filed against the police officers. Well, for more, we're going to Milwaukee, where we're joined by Jacob Blake Sr., the father of Jake Blake Jr. He's been fighting for justice for his son alongside the parents of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and others. Jacob Blake Sr., welcome to Democracy Now! We're so sorry about what happened to your son. If you can respond to the decision that just has come down in Louisville, and then talk about how is your son Jake in the hospital now?
Well, what happened in Louisville shows the two systems of justice in the United States, clear and cut. If a young lady is murdered by the police, someone is responsible for that death if the police are involved. But when it's a brown person, we don't find the quick or the swift end of justice. Jacob is doing much better. And his spirits are better. You know, it's hard for him because of the pain, but we stand in support of my son, as well as George Floyd's family and the Taylor family.
And Mr. Jacob Blake, where is the process with the grand jury in your son's case?
Right now, they've brought in an ex-police chief to do some investigation of what the district attorney has come up with at this point.
And can you talk about that day, which I know is extremely painful for you. You weren't in Kenosha when your son was shot by police officers. Talk about where you were and how you got the news, and then your response to the video.
I was driving on South Boulevard in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I reside. And I got a phone call, and my phone was connected to my car. And all I heard was his mother screaming, "He's shot, he's shot, they shot him." And I said, "Who shot who?" And she said, "The police shot Jacob." And it's almost like it rewinds in my head every day. I hear that phone call in my sleep when I'm awake, and I can't even explain to you the emotion that you have as a parent when that phone call comes to you. And I didn't have a Starship Enterprise. I couldn't beam up to Milwaukee, so I had been up all day, 2 days ago before the phone call. I had just got back, arrived back from Chicago. So now I knew I had to turn around and head back to Milwaukee. And it was just, I do not remember driving in the mountains. I do not remember driving through Kentucky. I don't remember. All I remember is walking in the hospital.
And that day that your son was shot was supposed to be such a happy day. Is that right? Your little grandson.
It started out as a happy day. My grandson, 2 hours before I got the call from his mother, maybe 3 hours. That day is such a blur. I can't tell you exactly. All I can tell you is how happy he was and the things that he had a list of things that he wanted his father to get. And we were laughing, and I said, "Man, well, you're going to spend all your money today, baby." And he laughed, and I said, "Just call me back later, you know, when they sing or cut the cake or whatever." And they said, "We're going to call," well, my grandchildren, all of them call me Papa. So, "Papa, we're going to call you back. I'm going to call you so you can see what I got." I remember hearing his little... Just, you know, you can't measure the happiness, but you could see the happiness. I could see the happiness in his voice. It just came through the phone, a picture of happiness. Just an 8-year-old just happy to be with his dad.
I want to go to the first news conference. We didn't expect you were going to be speaking. I believe one of the lawyers said you wouldn't be. But can you talk about that day before we go to that clip?
I had so many different emotions. You know, you have a father protective mode and a father... worried mode. I was so tired. I'd driven all night, and the news conference was that day, and it was. I was on at that particular time on an emotional roller coaster.
So let's go to that moment where both you speak as well as this is you.
They shot my son. 7 times. 7 times. Like he didn't matter. But my son matters. How would you feel if your white son walked up to you as a mother and said, "Mommy, why did the police shoot my daddy in the back?" You have no clue.
And you have repeatedly said, also at the March on Washington, your son is human, as if you have to say that. Tell us who your son is, and also your father, your son's grandfather, who is so well known in Chicago as a civil rights leader, the Reverend Jacob Blake.
Excuse me for a moment. I'm sorry. My son is a happy,
take as much time as you need, Mr. Blake. We are so terribly sorry about what's happened to your son and, of course, what's happened to your whole family as a result.
He was a a jokester as a kid. He was a happy-go-lucky, smiling jokester. And he thought everything was funny. And I could hear him laughing as a kid. And as he got older, me and him had a special type of relationship. And it was almost like he was my my best little friend at times. But knowing he was older, you know, he's heading towards 30. As a father, your relationship changes with your children, because now they see the things that you went through as a 30-year-old parent. So they respect you in a different way. And you share moments with each other that are priceless. My father, being a civil rights leader, taught me and gave me the ability to be the man that I am today. Firm, confident, unshakable. Now, in regards to the emotional way that some things get me, you guys got me with when I was listening to Brianna's boyfriend. And that 911 call, he was scared to death. Why are our children scared to death of people that are supposed to protect and serve them? In 2020, why do I have to continuously tell people that my son is a human being? Why are we looked at like we're animals? It's not a good place to be in. My father got beat for marching for civil rights 50 years ago, and we're still trying to get equal rights. At some point in time, you get tired. There's no avenue that's given you directly to do what you need to do. No one can explain to you what to do. They tell you it takes time. Well, how much time? They tell you to vote, and we vote, and we're going to keep voting. We have to change these laws, and we have to do something, because we've come up to this point to where the whole world is seeing the two systems of justice, and we're not in the mood nor in the mindset of taking it anymore.
Jacob Blake,
what are we to do?
We're going to continue this discussion. We ask you to stay with us, and we're going to post it online at democracynow.org. Jacob Blake Sr., father of Jacob Blake Jr., shot 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm Amy Goodman with Noreen Shea.